Jason Leisure's still here.
Hello.
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
I know if I write something really critical, I'm back in there next day and I will see that person face to face. So I better write responsibly. That doesn't mean pull punches.
No.
But that means what you write needs to be well supported, and it shouldn't be something that you'd have a problem saying to that person's face.
Jason Leisure.
Did you watch the quarterback show? Netflix? Didn't?
Nope.
I was going to ask you guys if any takeaways from
Ben Johnson.
Watch
it.
What did you
learn from not watching it?
Keep going. Next play.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
I actually think that question by Jason Leisure is actually pretty funny and poignant. Because I think Caleb should have watched that show, and I hope that he was lying to the assembled media when he said he didn't.
That was really interesting, because it sounded like to me that Ben might have told him, don't watch it. Like, that was my take on
Maybe.
It. Was that Ben said, hey, that's manicured television, that's for effect. You're going to learn about things that happened there from me. Let's just concentrate on our process. And I could see that being a sensible approach,
Maybe.
Frankly.
Maybe. I just thought that the way that Caleb answered it, he was real quick to be like, no, hell no, I ain't watching that. It was ridiculous that you would even ask me such a thing. Now joining us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline, you can download the Circa app today, is Jason Leisure, who's doing a bang-up job of covering the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times, and he visits with us once a week. Mr. Leisure, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I love the clip that you guys played, because the first question about the show was by Adam Hogue, who I like a lot, but it's like... it's like jumping up in the air in basketball without a plan. You pick up your dribble and it's like, oh no, what do I do? If he didn't watch the show, I don't know what to ask you.
I do like that you asked, did you learn anything by not watching it? That was pretty good. That's some quality stuff. So
are you still mad at me that I didn't watch it?
I'm a little surprised that you didn't watch it. I'm not mad at you, but I do think that it would lend some context to what you were watching every day up there at Hallis Hall. So let me ask you, what are you seeing every day up at Hallis Hall since this thing has started?
I am seeing a continuation of Ben Johnson's insistence on precision and not letting things slide. And I don't know what that's going to turn into wins and losses wise. I don't know how ready Caleb Williams or the Bears offense is going to be week one, but I can tell you right now, I know we are not going to be hearing in September the things we heard last year in September of, hey, they're letting a lot of things go in practice. You know, the older players think like they should really probably stay on top of us a little bit. You're not going to hear any of that. There's no way. And a big part of it is, again, this benefit of having a fresh set of eyes on your team, where Ben Johnson has no allegiance to hardly anybody on that roster. There is hardly anyone on that roster that he brought in. It's maybe a dozen guys or something like that between rookies, like the top rookies and the free agents, things like that. He doesn't, there's no obstacle to him, you know, pulling Caleb Williams and the first team offense off the field, or pulling any starter off the field for that matter.
Yeah, it's cleaner, isn't it, in that way? It's ideally, anyway.
It's objective.
Yeah, it's objective. That's a better word for it. Ideally, that's the way you're judging Braxton Jones and Ozzie Tripillo and Kieran Magaji. Ideally, it's the way you're judging Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland. I was struck by Kmet saying, oh, yes, this is a competition. It's not just that they're going to be on the field together. It's good for veterans to feel that sense of competition, isn't it? It's football.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the way that they were going hasn't worked, so lighting a fire under some people is a good idea. Now, it's a lot different. The two examples that you brought up are interesting, where you have a veteran fighting off a rookie for playing time. I think in Braxton Jones' situation, his experience doesn't really help him that much. It was interesting when Ben Johnson was asked about it the other day, and his answer was kind of to the effect of, yeah, theoretically that would give him a head start. It wasn't just, oh yeah, this guy's miles ahead of the other ones coming in. In Cole Kmet's case, no matter how much Ben Johnson loves Colston Loveland, Cole Kmet's experience does play a big factor in who's going to be more involved at tight end, because that is such a difficult position for a rookie to learn.
Over on the defensive side, I'd love to know what you see when you watch a Dennis Allen run a practice, because we've learned more about him, but what's it like to see how he does things?
I think it's similar to Ben Johnson in the sense that the intensity and the accountability is so much higher than what the Bears have been used to. Matt Eberflus came in talking a lot about that. We've seen it so clearly in the offseason practices and now in the first 2 days of training camp. What will be more interesting with Dennis Allen for me will be, as a strategist and as a manager of people, he's got to solve some problems that are still there. He's got to solve some problems that Matt Eberflus couldn't. Tyreek Stevenson is one of the first ones that comes to mind. Dennis Allen has to solve the equation of getting the most out of Tyreek Stevenson in a way that Matt Eberflus couldn't. And up front, defensive line, there's been some resources put into that, but there's still question marks. I mean, if you go across their starting defensive line, Montez Sweat's coming off a down year. Javon Dexter still has something to show you. Grady Jarrett, I don't know. I don't know if anyone can know for sure what he still has. Hmm. And Dayo Odengbo is a guy that they paid based totally on projection, not on
production,
what he's proven so far. So you still have all these questions in your pass rush, just more money sunk into it.
I wonder who the pass rushers from the back seven are going to be and how that's going to impact usage by Dennis Allen, because that's his gig, right? Jason is like, you know, Dio is not going to be a traditional D-end rushing the passer every time. He might stay at home while, you know, two or three dudes, dart towards the quarterback. I wonder who those people are going to end up being.
It could be a bunch of different guys. I mean, that's not something that we've seen so far.
Right.
But I mean, if you look at who, you don't have to come in if you're the new coach. Even as bad as things have been going for the Bears, Spiegs, you don't have to come in and tear up everything. Some things actually did work. And if he's looking for what you're bringing up as far as who are my guys in the second and third level that can be great pass rushers, Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker are both really good at it. You already have that on tape. You already know they can do that.
To go back to the Tyreek Stevenson stuff and Jalen Johnson being injured, I don't even know if they would feel comfortable answering this question, but do you then take Tyreek Stevenson while Jalen Johnson is out and say, guess what? If this were a game, you would be our number one corner. Do you treat him as if he's the number one corner while Jalen is out, because you might have to have him as your number one corner at some point?
At some point, and maybe in the long run, yeah. I mean, I think that is a very valid thing to bring up when it comes to Tyreek Stevenson. And, you know, part of your evaluation on whether you want to pay him when his contract comes up is this guy, does he have that potential? Does this guy have star cornerback potential, or is he, you know, just a solid guy that you can find another one of in the second round of the next draft or the draft after that? So, yeah, I think there'd be a lot of value in that. You could, you know, when they get into the season, they have Kyler Gordon available too to play inside or outside. But he has been so good for such a long time now in the nickel position out of the slot that I wouldn't want to move him at all from there. I'd want to develop some other options that you could use, like Tyreek Stevenson as your number one and, you know, maybe Terrell Smith or somebody else as an obvious number two if Jalen Johnson was going to miss time. But Jalen Johnson, by the way, not expected to miss time at this point. We're just talking hypotheticals.
Yeah, hypotheticals.
Yeah, Lawrence is concerned, but that's kind of his thing.
It's my bit.
Yeah, you know, he likes, he lives in the concern. He's the mayor of Worrytown. I am not renting any property there.
I keep getting reelected, though.
Yeah.
And for good reason.
By all the worriers?
Yes.
Yeah, because you're good at worrying.
This is our king.
It doesn't mean that your worrying is valid. You're impressive at worrying.
I feel like my worrying last year was validated in a way that you can't believe.
Well, this is
that's when people started moving in. They were like, this mayor knows what's up.
Real life anxiety is where your brain is just constantly scanning for the next problem.
Oh, dude.
Even if there isn't good reason to be doing that. Is that your bear's brain, Lawrence?
Yes. Just
constantly scanning for the next bear's problem no matter what?
Yeah, so let me get to it. How worried are you about Luther Burden?
Very. I'm buying a house in Worrytown. Is that what it's called?
You guys.
Is that what you called it?
Spins? Just rent together. Just live together. That's easier.
I got a room for Jason.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I am very concerned about that because that's a really high draft pick. That's 39th overall. There's a lot riding on that. And I think he comes in a little on the underdeveloped side to begin with. And now he's going to try to learn a complicated offense. They're all complicated at the NFL level, but this one in particular, I think, is complicated, and it's all about precision. And they've got veteran guys that they can trust to do that right now, probably. And you always hear about things like this where it's like Velus Jones misses the first 2 weeks of his training camp, his rookie year, because of a hamstring, and they just bring it up forever. It's always brought up, like, oh, you know, Velus a couple of years ago missed the first 2 weeks, and it hasn't ever really, like, you really do fall behind, maybe not so much literally, although that is a concern, but you fall behind in the eyes of the coaching staff, because as much as they talk about patience, they are wanting to move on just like everyone else is and settle into who are the key guys. Now, he is a high draft pick by the incoming coach, so Luther Burden is going to get his chances. But this does seem significant. If he misses the first week plus of training camp, it's not going to be easy to just walk in and claim a role. You've seen this before with guys like, you've seen the opposite of this. You saw where Darnell Mooney years back came in and was good to go on top of things right away, outperforming Anthony Miller, who had been there for a few years at that point. And he sold him. He sold the coaching staff on himself. You know, early on between off-season practices and the first couple of weeks of training camp.
Jason Leisure with us from the Sun-Times. Would you rather have a Ben schematic vision question or a Caleb Williams demeanor question? You pick.
Caleb Williams demeanor question.
To me, there were significantly fewer uhs and ums and pauses from Caleb. He seemed a lot quicker to a thought and sharing a thought the other day in response to your guys' questions. Did you notice that? And what does it mean if you did notice that?
Yeah, I noticed it. I think partly what it was he came right in from the practice field. They were doing something on the practice field before he came in, and he kind of bounded in, drenched in sweat. I think his heart rate was still racing pretty high, but I think the guy is just excited about the possibilities here. And you have to remember his background when you look at this challenge that Ben Johnson brings, coming in and knocking down some of what was taught to him his first year, not treating Caleb Williams like Caleb Williams is in charge of everything and he's the boss. And, boy, we better keep our 22-year-old boss happy. I think that Caleb Williams' history as an athlete going back to age 10 tells you that he's a guy who really is driven and really wants the right information and doesn't necessarily need everybody to placate him and placate his ego. And, you know, that's good because he doesn't have so much to have an ego about right now after a tough rookie year. There was a lot of good in that rookie year, but he's not Superman now in the NFL the way he was his last 2 years of college or the way some of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL are. So he's in a position where he needs to listen. He needs to be taught some things. And the enthusiasm that you see, Spiegs, I think speaks to his eagerness to get that information. As difficult as it might be, I think he craves it.
Yeah, I'm reminded of when the quarterback coach he was working with, Will Hewlett, said, Caleb Williams craves structure. Because that's way back when. All right, as a bonus, you get the Ben schematic question, too.
Oh, good.
How about him not deciding or knowing yet exactly what kind of run scheme they're going to run until he gets a chance to look at everybody in terms of what they're going to run the most of. What factors do you think are going to play into that for him, deciding whether what kind of run game they'll focus on?
Well, who's their most talented running back?
DeAndre Swift.
It's not even a question, right? He is their most talented individual playing that position.
Which makes me think that they're going to run wide zone more.
Well, but the question is, can he do what you need him to do? And if they need him to change, is he willing to change? And he sounds like someone that's very motivated to do that. He also kind of hints at some things that would be correct, that there were other factors outside his control that made it tough for him last year. If you look back to his last year in Philadelphia, that offensive line is a lot different than the one that he was running behind last year. Everything looks a lot better behind an offensive line like that. I think that Ben Johnson's got to see the real version of all three of these guys when they go to padded practices, which I assume will be Monday. And it's hard to tell how, for example, how serious DeAndre Swift is, how disciplined he is about following your directions and Eric Bieniemy's directions when it comes to running between the tackles until you actually put him in those live situations and see it.
So how are you feeling about these early practices?
Oh, they're the worst. I hate it so much. I'm up at like 5:30 every day. I would do so much better, Lauren. I'm not a morning person.
Poor you.
Yeah.
I'm just not. I would do so much better if these practices were at 10 p.m. That'd be fine with me.
So this happened inside of Halas Hall today with you talking about it.
Morning. Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
How do we like the early morning start?
Love it.
Come on, man. Okay, all right. Just hop into it.
So
I love that you don't love it.
Jason was one of the grumblers there?
Well, no, he asked how we liked it, and then he made eye contact with me, and I just kind of glared back at him. I'm just non-functional in the morning.
Hey, man, you're not that functional in the afternoon. Let's be honest.
That's harsh, but whatever I do it worse in the morning. I've spilled 2 days now, two practices. That's all we have now at this point. Two training camp practices, and we got to be there at like 7:45 or 8 a.m. or something like that up in Lake Forest. And both days I have spilled something on my shirt and ruined it before I've gotten there.
Oh, man.
Yesterday I was driving and dumped coffee down my shirt, a white T-shirt, and there was no excuse for that. I didn't hit a pothole. It was just simple, like, inability to use a cup properly. And then this morning, trying to get out the door for practice, I was putting sunscreen on my face and big glob of it landed right on my shirt. I mean, it's not a good start for your guy.
See, I like it because it takes care of some traffic issues for you. Not for you, but I mean,
not for me coming from the West, but it's just the morning is not a good time for me, man. I just don't even think right in the morning.
That's honest and that's fair. I mean,
I've never had a job where I had to be there before 10:30. Ever.
Yeah, and you get into sports journalism thinking that's safe.
For sure. Sure.
Like, I used to cover the NBA, be up till, you know, you'd be writing till midnight, get back to the hotel at like 1 a.m. or something. I'm fine with that. I can do that part of the 24 hours.
I wonder how the players like it, you know, because I remember when I was doing a morning show, it was really nice to be done for the day. By like 10 o'clock, you're like, I can do whatever I want.
Yes.
It's an entire day that I can do stuff.
I like it. I'm looking
Aren't
forward.
Aren't you guys getting up at 3 for that?
Morning shows?
Getting up ridiculous. If you have a morning show.
Oh, yeah. It's really bad on your body and takes years off your life.
Yeah. Yes. I just saw Dustin Rhodes the other day, and I'm like, do you nap? He still doesn't nap. He's not a napper. And so he gets a good solid 6 most nights and lives on that.
It's very important to stay true to your regimen, because that clock can for what we do, like missing stuff that's happening live, like the anxiety of that
but
is
I worry
problematic.
About, I worry about Dustin. You need more than 6.
Come on down to Worry Town. We got, you know, we'll take care of you for sure. Jason,
plenty of vacant lots, although they're going quick.
They are going quick.
I'm concerned.
So much.
Concerned about what's happening in those vacant lots.
Well, you should be. We're going to work on it.
You should be. I love that you're worried about it. You're going to fit right in, buddy.
It's part of my platform. Jason Leisure, thank you very much.
See you guys.
When we come back, categories!
Time to play.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Just to be clear, like, we love fun.
Afternoons on The Score.
So, I think it's time to play the game.
We're playing the game?
Yes, we're playing the game.
Do we have to play the game?
What's the game?
The game is categories. We play it every Thursday, and it's a lot of fun.
Two categories about sports, one not about sports. The object is to name items within the category. You can play along wherever you are. Along with that man, Lawrence Holmes, Chris Tannehill, and the disgraced former host of Categories himself.
Has that story been told yet?
Not yet.
The one about the list that came out of the former Categories hosts? What? What list?
Oh. Hey, man, I've been fighting that. I don't want that list to come out.
What, the list of former Categories hosts?
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah. Oh, that list? Yeah, I'm fine with that.
There were a lot of pictures of them together, and then...
Yeah. Do you have a relationship? Alex took the fifth, if memory serves. So here's the first category. Been a lot of talk about the running game with these Chicago Bears. It's football season, mister. I hold in my hot little hands the top 20 rushers from last year in the NFL.
Okay.
Rushing yards in the NFL last year. Who were the top 20 in rushing yards? Lawrence, you go first.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to go with a Bears category.
I understand. No, this is NFL, the entire NFL league. You're familiar with the NFL.
Not really. Jahmyr Gibbs.
Jahmyr Gibbs is number 5 on this list with 1,412 yards. Chris Tannehill.
I'll just say DeAndre Swift.
DeAndre Swift, number 18 on this list with 959 yards. These are people who rushed for yards in the NFL. You might have heard of a lot of them, Alex Kuhn.
Feeling safe on this one. How about Saquon Barkley?
Number 1 with 2,005 yards. Lawrence.
Derrick Henry.
Number 2 with 1,921 yards.
Oh, damn tight.
Chris Tannehill.
Frank Gore's still in the league, isn't he?
Oh, come on.
What about his son?
Come on. I know you want to watch The Sopranos on your phone. I get it. We're playing a game here. Is that really your guess?
Yeah,
it's a bastard. All right, Alex, what do you got? Running back. No, on Frank Gore.
Josh Jacobs.
Josh Jacobs is number 6 on the list. Lawrence.
Bijan Robinson?
Number 3 with 1,456 yards. Alex.
Najee Harris.
Najee Harris, absolutely on this list with 1,043 yards.
What an interesting story that's turned into, by the way.
Agreed.
Mr. Taylor from Indianapolis.
Jonathan Taylor, number 4 on the list. Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Gets interesting now.
Yeah. Anybody say James Cook?
Nobody said James Cook. He is absolutely on this list with 1,009 yards. Lawrence.
What's the kid from Illinois?
Mikel LeShore.
Mikel, roll your boat ashore.
Chase Brown.
990 yards.
He's on it?
Yes.
Let's go.
Impressive.
Shout out to the Fighting Belemas.
Alex. Got one?
Chuba Hubbard.
Yes, 1,195 yards. Now we're getting somewhere. Lawrence.
What was the number on Chase Brown?
990.
Lamar Jackson.
915. He's number 20 on this list. Well done, Alex.
How about Tony Pollard?
Your guy.
My guy, Tony Pollard. He saves it for later in the game.
Tony Pollard.
Are you serious?
A spectacular move.
1,079 yards for Tony Pollard. Lawrence.
Oh, man. We're getting low. This has been a long category.
I agree. Good showing.
I'm going to take a guess. Alvin Kamara?
Alvin Kamara, 950 yards. Alex.
Zach Charbonnet.
Oh. Is that a real person? Yeah, I know he is. He's Seattle. But no Zach Charbonnet. Lawrence, one more for the win just to rub it in. Got one?
The Terminator. Who's that? He's not the Terminator. His last name is Connor.
James Conner of Arizona, 1,094 yards. Well done. Only ones you guys didn't get, Aaron Jones, Bucky Irving in Tampa, Rico Dowdle in Carolina, and Joe Mixon. Tremendous showing. Let's see how you do on this one. Last night, Bryce Harper hit home run number 350. He's number 8 on the active home run leaders list. I am looking. 37 men have 200 homers or more who are active in Major League Baseball right now. Chris Tannehill, I need one.
Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge has 351. Alex.
Jose Altuve.
Jose Altuve is 246 homers. Lawrence.
Freddie Freeman.
Freddie Freeman has 353 home runs. Tanny.
Manny Machado.
Number 4 with 360. Alex.
Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts has 282 homers. Number 15. Lawrence.
Did someone say Schwarbs?
Nope.
Kyle Schwarber.
Kyle Schwarber has 317 as of this writing. Tanny.
Taking a shot here because I don't know if he's technically active or not. Anthony Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo.
Not retired yet, right? So yeah. I may have a case here.
Boy.
I think you do have a case.
All right. You know what? For the sake of keeping it moving, I know he may not be on it, but Francisco Lindor, is he on there?
Lindor is at 267. Okay, right. Rizzo's not on the list, so maybe they've decided he's not active. So go ahead. Alex Kuhn. Active home run hitter.
Jose Ramirez.
Jose Ramirez, 276. He's 18th. Lawrence.
Javi Baez.
I don't know. Javi Baez has not reached 200.
Oh, damn.
Javi Baez has not reached 200 home runs. Tanny, got another one?
There's a good little player out there in California somewhere. Not one of the famous teams or famous players, but Mike Trout.
395 homers, number 2 on the list. Alex.
Sorry, Cubs fans, there's this guy, this catcher, Salvy Perez,
who
you should probably not pitch to.
290. He's
never
number
thrown
13.
Him a fastball,
mm-hmm.
ever.
Tanny.
Vlad Jr. been around long enough?
Oh, good question. Vlad Guerrero Jr. Oh, Nelly, let me tell you about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's Keith Jackson is hosting categories.
Probably not if you haven't found him.
Nope, have not found him. That's a no on Vlad Jr. Alex, got one more?
Paul Goldschmidt.
Number 3
I
with 370 homers. Good job, Alex. Giancarlo Stanton, Carlos Santana, Eugenio Suarez, Marcelo Zuna, George Springer, Matt Olson. There's a lot. Jorge Soler and Justin Turner at the bottom of the list. There were more. All right, third category.
Okay.
It's hot. It's hot. You ask it a lot. Ask a man to change his beer on a day like this. But it's not as hot as it is in these countries. These are the top 40 hottest countries in the world. The top 40 hottest countries by temperature.
Okay.
In the world. Alex Kuhn, think about it. Think of a hot place and give me one.
The Philippines.
The Philippines is unfortunately... Not on the list. Might be hot, but it's not as hot as 40 other countries. Philippines, nope. Lawrence.
Dubai.
Dubai. Could Dubai not be on the list here?
If you tell me that Dubai is not on this list.
It's a really good guess, you'd think. I mean, I got all kinds of Arab countries, but I do not have Dubai. Maybe it's not a country. Is it a province or something? Right? Or it's like a republic, or so. It's not a country. I don't believe
it's a city.
It's a newer type of situation.
Is it a city? Is Dubai a city?
Oh, that's right. In Saudi Arabia or in the United?
Yeah,
Arab,
in the UAE,
United Arab Emirates.
I'll give you United Arab Emirates. That's number 2
list. That's on me. Yeah. Shout out to United Arab Emirates.
There you go. Yeah, our overlords. Tanny, hot country.
Mexico.
No, Mexico. Mexico's not nearly hot enough.
We have another hosting scandal here.
My God. No, Alex, you have another one? Or are you out? I forget. Lawrence.
No, I'm out.
Qatar.
Yes. Qatar is number 4. Is that it?
Can I keep going?
Sure.
Again, usually we go pop culture. It makes for more fun. We kick it around longer just for next time.
Oh, thank you.
Before you become a disgraced former host.
Come on, this has been killing it today.
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia is number 5.
Stay over there.
Iran.
Number 7.
Iraq.
Number 6.
Syria? No, it's too north,
no,
right?
No Syria. Sorry, thanks for playing.
What about India?
India is absolutely on this list.
Pakistan.
Pakistan is number 31. You're rolling now.
Egypt.
Naming hot places. Number 40 on the list.
The Congo.
The Congo.
The Southern Sudan. Sudan.
Sudan is absolutely here. Number 12.
And Southern Sudan should probably be on there as well.
Niger, Chad, Oman.
Chad Feldman? Yeah.
Kuwait, about Ghana, the Ivory Coast, Cameroon, Yemen, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Indonesia.
Is Ghana on the list?
What's that?
Ghana?
Ghana's on the list. Absolutely. There you go. You guys don't know geography. All right, yeah, I could have done pop culture. Fair. But it's hot.
He likes to do these, though.
What? I like to see what kind of knowledge you have of the world.
Yeah, you've done something now when Ryan Porth comes in the studio. You've really offended some radio sensibilities.
Ryan, don't you have to drive the horse and buggy home to the suburbs? It's going to be a 3-hour drive. Don't get behind a CTA bus. They make stops. All right? God. So the winner is Lawrence.
Is Jamaica on the list?
Jamaica is not on the list. But Lawrence, you won the running
Were
back
you
category.
Making a list?
And the hottest countries in the world list.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's a big day for Lawrence Holmes.
Yeah, I've won 4 out of the last 6 categories.
Oh, you're keeping track,
though. Who's
counting? Yeah, I am.
Oh, my God. The man is keeping track.
Keeping track, baby.
That's amazing.
And now that we're bringing it back, I got to be competitive.
Yeah, you do.
Well, good thing it's going away with football season. So
that's true.
How dare you?
My mind went blank before the football category, too.
Each week, you know, the top 20 rushers in Green Bay Packers history. Who is John Brockington? Whatever. The disgraced future host of categories, Lawrence Holmes, can tell you what's coming up next.
I can, and I can tell you that we need to talk a little bit of White Sox, and our buddy Alex is all growed up. He's been out in these streets, and he has got information, y'all, about your favorite Northside baseball team. So a little bit of both, a little Northside, a little Southside for you next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
You guys are great.
You're right. Thanks, Chris.
We'll send him the book. That is Chris Ronji.
Afternoons on The Score.
Colson Montgomery, deep fly ball to left center field, continues to carry. How about 2 nights in a row for the rookie?
Did I not just tell you about 7 minutes ago this one's far? This is a different White Sox team post All-Star break.
Hit his first big league home run last night, follows it up with a 3-run shot here tonight to tie the game at 4 apiece.
Highlights courtesy of CHSN. And by the way, if you didn't know, if you're someone that doesn't have CHSN and you're like, let me know when it's on free TV, they have a 7-game schedule that's going to be on WCIU, the U, starting with the 3 games against the Cubs. So this weekend, you can, if you don't have cable or if you opted out of Fubo or whatever, you can watch the games on WCIU if you want to see the Sox call of the game. Colson Montgomery has only had 51 at-bats at the major league level. He is already a 1 WAR.
Man, that's pretty cool. Playing some important defensive positions.
Obviously, like that helps to up your WAR value. But
I wish
he's been hitting the ball.
He has been. I wish he'd be at shortstop more. They should go ahead and just let him do that. Like, go ahead. Like, what are you doing? Might as well just check out what your main guys can do. Maybe there's some pressure they're taking off and they think in some way. But he has been hitting. Last night, a 3-run homer in the 2nd inning to tie the game. And a 2-run double in the 8th to put the White Sox ahead. So 5 RBIs last night for Colson. And as you heard in the call, there is 2nd straight night with a home run. How do the Corey Seager comps feel? That's high as an aspiration. We all know that.
I still have a lot of questions about him as a hitter at the major league level, but so far,
but it's fun.
It's been good.
It's been good, and like you understand why those comps were made. Look at the frame. Look at the speed and the comfort and the athleticism with that frame. And even though the swing is long, there is a lot of power when it comes off the bat.
I'd love to know what the White Sox are saying about sending him to hit school and like what they wanted accomplished from that, like trying to figure out, well, let's break him all the way down. And then whether or not it's fixed, because it can look fixed when you're a couple of weeks into the league. And it's like, oh, and then people get the book on you. Like, if are we still having, like, I look at these numbers are not sustainable, okay? Like, I wouldn't expect anyone to just come in and bash. But if we get to late August and he's 260 with an on base of 335 and he's still slugging 400, you probably feel like that's a victory in itself.
I understand. And we can do a deeper dive. I've got my notes from back then on what they were working on in terms of the swing school. But our time might be better served to point out other young kids that are also doing it, like Kyle Teal right now. Kyle Teal had 4 hits last night, and he's had a really good approach in his at-bats. The OBP has been high. He almost hit a home run in Pittsburgh. He went over the weekend. He hit a ball off the top of the Clemente wall out there, and then he hit one last night, including the 3 other hits. And so it's like, That's what's kind of fun is when some of the kids of consequence are showing you a little something. It's just a moment. It's just a moment in time. It's 5 wins in 6 games.
Yeah, it's okay to be like, hey, this is nice, because it's not like White Sox fans have had a lot of nice things happen, and Colson Montgomery has been someone that people have been waiting on. Like, he's the restart of things to come. I am not as high on him as others are. You and I have discussed this. But I'm happy that White Sox fans are getting a chance to, like, watch some winning baseball. And it's nice to – not that there's a ton of juice, but to add a little bit of juice to Cubs-White Sox this weekend, it's nice to have them coming in and being a dangerous team for the Cubs, especially right now with the Brewers just, like, being the best team in the world.
If the White Sox beat up on the Cubs a little bit this weekend, that would be something that happened. Tanny, does it save your season if that takes place?
No, nothing saves seasons like this. Although they are more, you know, palatable watch, which I enjoy. I like these kids are playing with juice, man. You know, like they you can tell like there's better chemistry going on here than I think during the last rebuild. Now, a lot of things can change in that regard, but I'm enjoying watching these guys have fun and succeed generally. But, you know, it's time. It's like a Bears-Packers thing. I think the Cubs have won like 9 straight or something like that. So it's time to end that, I think. It's baseball. Like, you know, take one, please. You know, that's all I need.
Is Hauser going tonight? Tomorrow.
Yes.
So Hauser will go tomorrow.
Hauser Shota, really good matchup tomorrow.
Hauser Shota is a really good matchup. I'll be very surprised if Hauser's not traded between that start and the deadline.
You just go across the field.
It's possible.
On Saturday. Just go on across.
It's possible.
How fast can Nolan Casey make it here is my question.
We won't do it for Alcantara, but for Hauser, you throw in Savali.
Hey.
And now we're getting somewhere.
Tanny, let me ask you a question. Would you want Matt Shaw?
Oh, they're not giving up Matt Shaw.
I know they're not, but you would you want him? And then you go, all right, Matt Shaw, come play third base. We got Colson Montgomery here. You got Vargas over at first. My drop at second, I guess.
What about Lenin Sosa?
I like Matt Shaw. I don't know in terms of the White Sox plans. Like, you know, I'm not. You take a good player, right? But in terms of how it all fits, they got a lot of things they need to sort out. Who's playing third? Who's playing first? Like, I don't know. Like, he's a really good player. It depends what you're, you know, giving up to get him. But I don't think the Cubs would do that.
No, they wouldn't.
I just want to throw some Cubs into the conversation.
Well, as of right
now, Sox are cooking right now. You know, 5-6.
As of right now, Luis Robert is still on the White Sox. Do you think that he will stay there? Alex Kuhn, what have your sources told you?
No, I want to ask you guys that.
No,
I'll get to it.
Bigfoot over here.
Look at the clock.
He's got some sauces. No, okay.
Tell us stuff.
All right, fine. So yesterday I was at the Cubs game, and I sat down at lunch with a scout from the Royals. And he is in charge of a area of the country, and he loves the Cubs hitting prospects. But as far as Luis Robert Jr., he told me that he saw him, I think it was a week or two ago, and he said, he showed me everything he needed to show me in 10 minutes, and said
in a good way, yes.
I'd bring him here tomorrow if we could get him. We're not in a position to do it, but he said he would bring him here tomorrow if he could. And that
the reports out there that the White Sox don't want a diminished return. Obviously, the $20 million club option for next year.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some value. What do you do with that?
That's instructive to know that an area scout takes a look at Luis Robert and says, oh yeah, I'd trade for him tomorrow. And then he goes back and reports. And what a GM decides to do, I mean, it's up to them. But the scout out there doing his job says, yeah, that guy's
ready. And I love hearing that as a Sox fan. I always seen Luis Robert, he's a Ferrari who just has not been properly maintained. You know, the routine maintenance is not being done on this guy. Mm-hmm. And I think a change of scenery, I think, would do him a lot of good. And maybe change the scenery in terms of coaching, too. You know,
yeah,
I don't know. But maybe he's just healthy now. I don't know. He's certainly playing well now.
I don't know that I've ever seen the effect of coaching on Luis Robert, frankly. And I don't know if that is entirely on the White Sox or partially on him.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, you can't make any blanket statements about the White Sox based on the individuals, because you keep looking and you're like, wait, is it them? Is it the guys or is it the coaching? Because you look at Kopech and you go, the White Sox tried to tell him exactly what the Dodgers told him, but he listens to the Dodgers because they win stuff. You look at Gavin Sheets and you go, well, we all kind of saw that in a role he could be really good. They were probably playing him too often, and yet he has thrived in San Diego.
You could keep going on individuals like that, but after a while, you end up with a big pile of individuals like that. It's clear that the mistakes have been in process, because you should be able to find some of those individuals that you actually reach and get the most out of. And they didn't, again and again and again. So that's when you get it. When you take a cohesive look, you realize that they failed.
But then you look at TA and you go,
there's another one. I know. But
had he had a Ron Washington in the beginning, how different does he look as a player?
Is it all on the individuals? Moncada and Eloy?
It's a great question, man.
I think
it's a great, like, once the, once never the, get an answer to it.
I think
a satisfying
once,
one.
I think once the list gets that big, it's clearly organizational.
Fair enough. That's a discussion. Let's further this discussion tomorrow. Let's have a conversation about that
tomorrow. I'll see you then. I will meet you right here.
Yeah, we have a radio show to do together and everything, so it works out. Mark Grody's got a Bears report next on The Score.